Today, on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
And I know we try to get the first injection done the same day we see the patient oftentimes because we don't want them at home thinking about it over the next couple of days because they can psych themselves out of treatment.
Today, Drs. Mehta and Garg joined the podcast to discuss safety of intravitreal injections in this PureDirect Special Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Sonia Mehta, and I'm a retina surgeon at Wills Eye Hospital, and I'm also associate professor of ophthalmology at Thomas Jefferson University and partner at Mid-Atlantic Retina here in Philadelphia.
And I'm Dr. Sunir Garg. I'm a retina specialist and professor of ophthalmology and chief of the retina service at Wills Eye Hospital and Thomas Jefferson University, and a partner with Mid-Atlantic Retina, also here in Philadelphia.
Thank you for joining us. An important part of retinal care is helping patients understand the role, safety, and experience of intravitreal injections. Sunir, ready to get started?
Of course, Sonia.
Sunir, for many patients and family members, the idea of an intravitreal injection can initially feel intimidating or horrifying. How do you typically frame these conversations to help patients better understand the safety, importance, and routine nature of these procedures?
It really is a crazy and horrifying thing that we ask patients to do. And for a lot of times, they're meeting me for the first time. And I said, I can help you a lot. I can help not only stop you from getting worse, but often make your vision better. You're going to get to know me better than you want. And the way I'm going to make this better is by putting medicine in your eye with a needle. And you see, like, the family member pass out and the patient hang their head and everybody starts freaking out. And, you know, everybody wants to know how horrible is it? Because when you're a kid, the worst thing that can happen is cross your heart, hope to die, and stick a needle in your eye. And I'm actually making that true for a lot of them. But for a lot of folks, you know, I tell them that since you've been in the office today, I've done 10 of those injections. My walls aren't that thick and they haven't heard any screaming. And that helps. And then I also tell them that a lot of the folks that they see, many of whom are much older than they are, also are here for those shots and they're doing great as well. And that usually helps to turn on the temperature in the room. And I let them know that we have a bunch of really great drops, which will make them comfortable. And if that doesn't work as well as we'd like, there's a lot of things that I can do to keep them comfortable during the injection. And there'll be a bunch of people helping to take care of them. And I tend to kind of speak softly and quietly and in a slow tone. And that also helps to just sort of relax the environment in the room. But especially that first injection, it really is kind of spooky.
Right. Yes. And I know we try to get the first injection done the same day we see the patient oftentimes because we don't want them at home thinking about it over the next couple of days because they can psych themselves out of treatment. So as soon as we talk about the treatment, we try to get it done as quickly as possible after that. Are there any particular best practices you feel are sometimes underappreciated?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different things that I think we do in practice that patients find to be helpful. I think helping them understand what's happening through the process is really helpful. Even something as simple as putting in the numbing drops. We specifically tell them we're putting in the numbing drops and we're going to put in a lot of them. That seems to help. We give them a chance to work. We don't rush that part of it. We'll give the antiseptic agents a chance to work. And one of the things that I found to be helpful is although I started off my career using a lid speculum, a lot of times I'll either have one of my personnel help hold the patient's eyelids open. And we know that's really important because that's where a lot of the infection risk comes from. Or even sometimes I'll hold the lids open myself to expose it. That seems to be a lot more comforting for them rather than the speculum. And then as I'm doing the procedure, I also kind of talk to them about what I'm doing. One of the benefits of me retaining a mask since COVID is I'm not as worried about aerosolizing, you know, bacteria as I was before. So that helps me with communication. And sometimes I'll tell random stories to help distract them from what we're about to do.
Terrific. Those are all great pearls. And that study that you referenced, that was a study that you did where you randomized with the lid speculum, randomized patients to lid speculum, no lid speculum. And patients definitely loved having no lid speculum and the human touch to retract the eyelids. And they identified that actually as one of the most painful parts of the procedure was just putting the lid speculum into the eye. prior to treatment. So that was a huge win for the, like, pearl for the injection community.
Yeah, if you look, there's a bunch of movies like Minority Report and Clockwork Orange, where that's the crazy thing that they do is put in the light speculum. I think it just weirds people out.
Right. Great. So how important is the role of office staff, technicians, and caregivers in helping to create a reassuring experience for patients receiving these injections?
I think it's so critical. You know, from the time the patient comes in to meeting our front desk staff to the various personnel that they meet through the office, and very importantly, the technician that's going to help them through the injection procedure, it's really important. I think having that sense of these are professionals, they're competent, and they want me to have a good experience, I think really helps to set a nice tone for the overall procedure.
Nice. And then many patients require repeated injections over a long period of time. How do you help patients and family members stay engaged with their treatment and avoid fatigue of treatment, fear, or loss of follow-up over time?
So that's a real issue that all of us struggle with all the time. That's very much true in our patients with diabetes. Mm-hmm. We are one of many doctors that they have, and a lot of them are working age adults. And loss to follow-up is a huge problem. One of our colleagues, Jason Hsu, did important work on that. And even for our patients with macular degeneration, they're older and mobility becomes an issue. I'll tell them that it's important. And most patients know that because they can see better. And sometimes life will happen and they'll go a period of time without having treatment. They'll start to lose vision again. Mm-hmm. Those patients will come into the office regardless of what else is going on in their life because they don't want to have that experience again. And we have drugs that can not only get them good, but keep them good, and often keep them good at a longer period of time. And for a lot of our patients, they're not coming in as often as they did 15 years ago. And every 2 months, every 3 months, or even longer, it's becoming increasingly common for the patients. And that also helps that these treatments are a for now thing, but maybe not every month forever.
Right.
And for some of our patients, like those with diabetes, we can often put a pause on treatments for a while and let them coast for sometimes years on end before giving them a tune-up with more injections.
Right. These are great points. And I think, like with patients, sometimes if we are sensing a loss to follow-up or poor compliance to the treatment plan, I'll often try to understand what it is, like why isn't it they can't come in on time for treatment, to get an understanding of like where we can help and if it's work or then maybe a later appointment in the day might help them, or if it's a caregiver bringing them in, how can we help with that so that they can stay compliant to their treatment plan? These are all excellent points. When discussing potentially adverse events or complications with patients, how do you balance transparency and informed consent while also making the patients feel confident about their treatment?
It's a great question. And, you know, I focus on the data in terms of what the shots are able to do for their vision. And for a lot of our patients with diabetes, it can help them regain reading or driving vision. That's often true for a patient with macular degeneration as well. And our goals are to get them better and to keep them better. And so I think we focus on that. The injections really are super safe. The thing that we're most concerned about is infection. But with all the risk mitigation strategies that we and others around the world have developed, the infection risk is somewhere in the order of 1 in 5 or 6,000. Mm-hmm. And I help patients understand that, yeah, if you notice redness or pain or loss of vision starting the first few days after the injection, but really any time in the first couple of weeks, we want a phone call, even if it's at night, and we'll see the patients. If we catch them early, most of the patients do really well.
Yeah, right. And you were very involved with that study on chlorhexidine as an antiseptic for intravitreal injections. And that was a very helpful paper because chlorhexidine is more comfortable for patients. Can you tell us more about that?
So what our group and other groups have shown is that for a lot of patients, what they don't like is the betadine effect, not necessarily the way they feel from the injection. Half the patients didn't have any discomfort with the betadine, but half of them do. Mm-hmm. Some of that discomfort can last until the next day. And for some patients, around 10% of people, they want to stop the shots because of the burning and irritation that they have from the betadine. And starting about 10 years ago, some groups talked about using a different antiseptic, which is alcohol-free chlorhexidine, which seems to work just as well in preventing infection. patients tolerate it better. They have less corneal epitheliopathy. They tend to just have less irritation. And that's helped, at least for a number of my patients, helped a lot. And over the past couple of years, I've basically switched to using chlorhexidine almost exclusively. And patients seem to be really happy with that. Have you had a chance to use it much?
Yes. So I transitioned all my patients over to chlorhexidine as well, based on that study that you were part of. And I've also, all my patients thank me for doing that, because it's decreased dry eye sensitivity after the injection and does just as great of a job with the antisepsis. Thanks for joining me today, Sunir. This has been great. And thank you for joining us for our discussion on intravitreal injections.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PeerDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PeerDirect.com. Listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my Flash Briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Dr. Mehta and Garg. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.